Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. This week we hear from an Anglican priest in Athens, part of the diocese in Europe, about the migrant crisis there. Also, we find out about a new app celebrating the Psalms, and we hear about a performance of The Passion taking place at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe this week. As well as the migrant situation in Calais, a camp housing hundreds of people has been established in Athens in Greece. The people staying there have mainly fled from Syria and Afghanistan to travel through Turkey to the Greek islands. The Reverend Canon Malcolm Bradshaw is the senior Anglican chaplain in Athens. I spoke to him after he'd visited the camp and started by asking him how the migrants are getting to the Greek mainland.
Many of the islands are really just somewhere as close as probably 10 miles or so from the Turkish border, and so into dinghies. And over they come. But behind all that is a vast trafficking program. It's that trafficking program which enables them to get across. And linked also with that is that Greece has, since the new government came into being last January, has eased the control of the borders. So that makes Greece not only a safer passage than going across to Italy, but also an easier passage.
Are they planning to stay in Athens then? What happens when they get there, and why aren't they moving on?
Greece at the moment is a country which has its own economic problems and cannot really look after its own population, let alone take on another population from other countries. Unemployment amongst Greece is very, very high at the moment. So these migrants have no intention of staying in Greece. They intend to make their way up into Northern Europe to Germany, the Scandinavian countries, and if it were possible, into Britain.
If you look on the Diocese in Europe website, there are pictures of you visiting the camp. What was it like when you got there?
I went there at about 7:15 in the morning. On the square, I met up with the Salvation Army, and we actually distributed sandwiches and milk there. And then we went up to the encampment itself. And the encampment itself is really made up of lots of small tents. And at that particular moment in time, when there were 300 there, there were just two toilets and just a hose pipe, which was available for washing and hygiene and all the rest of it.
And what sort of mood were the migrants in?
They were hospitable. Some who were newly there were hesitant to take food from us, but once the child had stretched out and had taken a sandwich, then others were keen to receive. We didn't see any violence at that particular point. We are a bit concerned as to what's going to happen maybe within the next week or so, because the Greek government has now found a site on the edge of the city to move this group.
You've mentioned the Salvation Army are helping making sandwiches. What about other local people? I mean, are they willing to provide food and drink for the migrants?
We really have to take our hats off to the local population. There are incredible sites of generosity. Whilst we were there, some young men came from a bakery. They had bags of freshly baked cheese pies, which they were giving out. There are other organisations which have come with toys for the children. There is Doctors Beyond Borders. They've got a doctor there, if not two, who are helping to try and check the health of the migrants that are there. And I think the story has been the same out in the islands. I mean, when this began to become imminent, then it was apparent that the islanders, on the limited resources they have, were trying to meet human need. But of course now they are totally overwhelmed. The whole story of that is because of numbers. And now on some of the bigger islands, you've got a population of migrants there which is over half of the indigenous population on the islands.
How's it being reported? Do you get the sense that Greek people are sort of losing patience with this, or are they sort of looking long term and thinking that these people will be moving out and moving, as you say, up to Northern Europe?
I think the general sort of situation, the general sort of mood is people are just overwhelmed. The numbers are now huge, and the government has no structure by which to be able to cope with such numbers. And people are just saying, well, what can be done? I mean, we just don't know how to cope with it.
Now, you've started an appeal for money to help the migrants. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Now that Greece has sort of hit the media again, people have very generously made contact and said, if we sent some money out, would you be able to place it where it can be helpfully used? That we can most certainly do. The money will largely go to an organisation called Apostoli, which is the central administrative office of welfare work by the Greek Orthodox Church. They are receiving appeals from the bishops who are responsible for the islands along the Turkish border for food to be sent out and for shoes and pharmaceuticals and toiletries. So what we will do is to place the money with Apostoli. So some of that money will go to there. Other people will want it to go to helping people, Greek people, indigenous people who are facing austerity. So again, we're able to give that some of that to Apostoli, who have already got a very effective food distribution system within the centre of Athens. They are giving out 10,000 meals a day to Greeks and to the homeless.
Malcolm, you paint a very bleak picture of life for both Greeks and migrants in the country. Is that how it feels?
In one sense, I mean, you could live in part for Greece and be totally unaware of this. I had friends come in recently and had a good holiday here in Greece and in a certain sense were totally unaffected by the situation that's here in Greece. As you probably know, we've also got capital control here in Greece, so for the Greeks it's very difficult for them to get any substantial money out of the banks at the moment. So in one sense, as a tourist here, you could actually be here in Greece and, okay, if you're in Kos, the island of Kos, which is a popular British tourist resort, you will be face to face with the migration problem. But if you were in Crete, you probably would not come across it. For those of us that are living in here, well, I mean, we see the signs of the austerity program that's here, and we also come across, without too much difficulty, the signs of the migration that's taking place in and through Greece. And there is a growing sense that shops are affected. Greece cannot import anything at the moment, and it's a heavily importing country. We're also aware that small businesses are closing because they're dependent upon imports, and they can't get the supplies that they want them, or they can't get the ingredients to the particular product they make. We're aware that the ambulances are not being able to be repaired because imports can't be brought in. So bit by bit, we're beginning to feel the crisis, as at the moment it's growing.
Canon Malcolm Bradshaw there. And if you'd like to find out more about the appeal, you can go to the Diocese in Europe's website, and there are more details on the front page. The latest publication from the Church of England has been launched, bringing the ancient tradition of reading the Psalms to Apple devices and e-readers. Reflections on the Psalms has short meditations written by different contributors. I asked Rachel Harden, the Deputy Director of Communications for the Archbishop's Council, whether the Psalms are still relevant.
I suppose the question I'd throw back to you or to anyone who asks that is, do you ever get depressed? Do you ever get fed up? How do you feel when you get up in the morning? And I think what the Psalms give us, and in fact I found this in another blog which is fantastic, there's just no collection of poetry in the history of the world that has impacted as many people as deeply and profoundly as the Psalms. One of the things I did, I wrote a blog about it myself when I realised the app was coming out, and I, in a 24-hour period, I grabbed about four or five people that I work with or live with in one case, and said, what do the Psalms mean to you? And what was really refreshing was everybody had a personal tale. Generally, it was when I'm uncertain, unsure, unhappy, rather than thinking, how do I deal with it? There's spiritual help, and it's embodied in one of the 150 Psalms.
What sort of things did they tell you then? Which Psalms, first of all, did they pick out that they liked?
Psalm 23 is a fantastic example. Anyone who's as old as myself, or perhaps a little younger, often was told to learn it by heart. I learnt it when I was at Sunday school. And, walking through the valley of the shadow of death, or in pastures green he leadeth me, it's that kind of mixture of hope and despair that juxtaposition that we all feel in our daily lives. And I think you read it and you think, gosh, here's somebody writing this. And most were written about 3,000 years ago. And you think, they get how I feel, because human emotions don't change. And I think the beauty of this app is that many of us now, in fact, more of us access internet via our mobiles than we do in a fixed position. So therefore, having it on our phone, you get it out of your pocket, you've had a grotty day at work and you think, I've had enough, and you click on one of the Psalms and there is someone else who felt like you. Okay, in the days when there weren't any apps, etc., etc. But it just makes you realise that, you know, that's the beauty of the Bible and particularly the book of the Psalms. So I think the app is there for people just to dip into as and when they want.
And there are also meditations that go along with the Psalms on the app.
Yeah, and I think they're really helpful. But, you know, there's also a range of people. And if you go and look at the app, you can see who they are. But who are experts in this area. So therefore, you might read a verse and think, what on earth does that mean? And they explain it and perhaps provide some poignant questions. I mean, one of the people I interviewed was, she's a theology student and she works for Soul Survivor. And she basically talked about the issue of fear, and a really nice line. She said to me, it reminds me that God is much bigger than the things I worry about, but nothing so small that it doesn't concern him. And I thought that's a really nice way of putting it, because sometimes that's how we all feel. We don't quite know where to go.
Rachel Harden there. And if you want to find out more, you can search for Reflections on the Psalms on the App Store, and there will be an Android version coming soon. Finally, a contemporary version of The Journey to the Cross is being performed at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe this week. Claire Henderson-Davis is the director of Passion. She told Tim Mayo the idea behind the play.
The performance is really a love story between, it's the reimagining of the Passion as a love story between a man and a woman, or you could say between God the lover and God the beloved, as in the Song of Songs, or between the masculine and feminine parts of the divine, or even between the masculine and feminine parts of the psyche in a kind of Jungian sense. So it's really about it. Kind of brings the feminine into full equality with the masculine in our imagining of God. The performance itself is a duet between myself and Fraser Patterson, who's the male dancer, and it's narrated by the poet Malcolm Guite using his sonnet cycle On the Stations of the Cross. And the music is improvised by Dan Forshaw on the saxophone and Jan Payne on the oboe.
How did the performance come about?
Well, I heard Malcolm Guite reading his poems at Greenbelt in 2013, and I had a strong intuition about how I could work with this sonnet cycle to make this kind of contemporary performance of the Passion. So I went to speak to him about it, and he was interested in collaborating with me, and I imagined this happening at Ely Cathedral. So the piece is a piece that moves around the cathedral in a way that also involves the audience, in the sense that the audience becomes the crowd in the piece just through the whole movement of the piece through the cathedral.
So you said that reclaiming cathedrals as performance space is a motivation behind your work. What do you hope the Passion performance will do for that kind of art more generally in cathedrals and churches?
Well, I think cathedrals are particularly public spaces, so that, for example, people go to visit cathedrals who are not particularly religious or who are not necessarily going to actually attend services. But I think that people are often going to cathedrals in search of something which is not necessarily delivered through kind of thinking of the cathedral, you know, just in terms of a kind of heritage experience, in terms of the building. And the liturgy is really a big part of life in cathedrals, and, you know, often done very beautifully. But I think if you think about how the church engages in the public sphere, often I think, especially in this age of diversity, it engages in a very wordy way by, for example, entering discussions about things like social justice or poverty, etc., but not necessarily thinking that the liturgy is the public face of the church or is a way of inviting people into greater engagement with the Christian story. And I think I'm interested in how can we offer the liturgy in that way, because I think people are looking for not just an engagement with words, but a more embodied engagement. If you think in the contemporary world that people are interested in, you know, yoga and meditation and Pilates and things which in a way offer them some kind of embodied expression which has a kind of quasi-religious overtones. And I think that people want to be drawn in on that more primary level. And I think cathedrals are good places to explore new forms of that. And in fact, I'm about to begin a 3-year residency at Chester Cathedral as a practice-based liturgical theologian.
And Claire has written a blog about the play. You can find that and the blog written by Rachel Harden about the Psalms by going to the blogs box on the front page of the Church of England's website. That's it for this week's podcast. I'm Gillian Moody. Thanks for listening.